This will be the beginning of a series on the four foundations of mindfulness, starting with an introduction, an introductory talk to the four foundations. Let's begin with a quote from Andy Olinsky in his book Unlimiting Mind. He says, "Each moment of consciousness is a precious gift. Awareness itself is the primary currency of the human condition, and as such, it is inherently of immense value and deserves to be spent carefully. Merely sitting quietly in a serene environment, letting go of the various petty disturbances that roil and diminish consciousness, and experiencing as fully as possible the poignancy of this fleeting moment, this is an enterprise of deep intrinsic value, an aesthetic experience beyond words. The more unified, stable, luminous, and attentive the mind is at this moment, the more profound the experience. Our contemporary view of consciousness is so different from this, so much less. It is as if the accomplishment of mere tasks is of primary value, while the quality of awareness with which these tasks are undertaken is irrelevant. One can hurtle through the day doing this, that, and the other thing, often simultaneously, with great busyness and pressure, only to relax in the evening by trying to keep up with images that flash across the screen multiple times per second. For many of us, the deep states of tranquil alertness of which the mind is capable are entirely unknown." Thus, the need for mindfulness. Mindfulness in Pali is sati. Sacred attention, the capacity to be present in this moment and to actually know what is happening, free from distortion, free from stories, free from the past and the future. The present doesn't need for you to drag the past into this moment, nor does it need for you to project the future. The present stands by itself. Heather Martin describes sati like this: knowing what's happening while it's happening, not adding, liking, judging, having a quality of respect in it, the heart aspect, and honoring. Sati is being deeply with, and so knowing how to respond. Sati, or mindfulness, doesn't change the experience, it deepens it. We are undisturbed, unentangled. No suppression, no entanglement. This is what the Buddha would call the middle way. There's a story of a young monk who once told the abbot that the abbot was using too many words in his talks. The old abbot said, "Come to the talk tonight. You will hear a talk with all the essential teachings in it, using only 5 words. This is the teaching he gave that night. Today is today. Today is not yesterday. Today is not tomorrow. Today is today." So despite our tendency to live in the past or in the future, everything is actually here now. Whatever we're doing it now. Fantasies, although their content is about the future, actually occur now. Memories, though their content is about the past, actually occur now. Today is today. And this is where mindfulness can arise. So what does mindfulness involve? Well, mindfulness involves establishment and awareness as the main gateway to opening, the practice of seeing things clearly, what actually is. It involves abandoning all grasping and resistance for a non-judging awareness. Mindfulness involves diligence, clarity, understanding. It involves knowing the body, as we will hear in future talks, knowing the body, knowing the feeling tone, the mind, the emotions, and the thoughts for what they are, impermanent and insubstantial phenomena. Listen again. The body, the feeling tone, the mind, the emotions, the thoughts, knowing them for what they are, impermanent and insubstantial. Andy Olensky says, if it is a thought, then there is no sense cognition. But in a moment of sense cognition, there are no thoughts. At first, there may be far more mind moments of mental cognition than of sense cognition in the stream of consciousness. But over time, as the practice of mindfulness of the body develops, one can actually have multiple consecutive moments of sense awareness uninterrupted by thinking about what one is sensing. To those who habitually think too much, this is experienced as blissful relief, and it is an essential starting point for growth and understanding. So what else does mindfulness involve? It also involves a commitment to sila, or ethics. This is what makes mindfulness practice a spiritual practice, the commitment to sila, or ethics. It's not the same as self-judgment. Rather, it is attention to whether our thoughts and actions lead to more suffering or lead to awakening. And mindfulness involves reconnection with something larger than ourselves. We're part of a larger, much older process. This is where we remember that so many others have gone before us. It can become an immense inspiration for the practice. Mindfulness balances all the other factors. For example, in the seven factors of enlightenment, mindfulness balances the energizing and tranquilizing factors. There is this quality of what Joseph Goldstein calls bare attention. As Robert Frost said, anything more than the truth would be too much. It's like listening to music. We're not paying attention to the notes that were just played. We're not paying attention to the notes that will come. Only this note is significant. And bare attention from another tradition. Mother Teresa was asked what she said when she prayed. I don't say anything. I listen. And what does God say? God doesn't say anything. He listens too. I want to read the actual words of the Buddha in the Majjhima Nikaya, the introduction to the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. This is what the Buddha has to say about the importance of mindfulness. Bhikkhus, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and grief, for the attainment of the true way, for the realization of nibbana, namely, the four foundations of mindfulness. What are the four? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu abides contemplating the body as a body, ardent, fully aware and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. He abides contemplating feeling as feeling, ardent, fully aware and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. He abides contemplating mind as mind, ardent, fully aware and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. He abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. So we have to assume that in the repetition present in these descriptions, the Buddha was trying to tell us that they are important, even indispensable. These are the words, the descriptions that were repeated. In mindfulness, there is abiding or resting in awareness. There's a sense of repose. In mindfulness, there's the factor of being ardent, a kind of balanced, sustained energy, and one that appreciates the value of the path, kind of enthusiasm. We can feed ardent energy by reflecting on impermanence and karma. The same kind of energy that one would use in the task of carrying a pot of water on one's head without spilling a drop. Ardent energy. It gives courage for the hard times. There's also repetition of clearly knowing, fully aware. This is the wisdom factor. Lets us see our motivations. It restrains papancha, the proliferation of thought in the mind. It guards the sense doors, not guarding them from receiving, but guarding them from reacting. And there's the phrase, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. This is a way of saying grasping and aversion. Other words that the Buddha uses that we will hear in future talks are to notice internally and externally, to notice the arising and passing away, and to notice without clinging, just noticing without adding any commentary. One more piece from Andy Olinsky. He says, the Buddha offers an image of the mind like a water jug. If it is half full of water, Mara, the personification of delusion in Buddhist mythic imagery, Mara can gain access and cause all sorts of mischief. This happens when one senses the world with half of one's available awareness and thinks about it with the other half. Mara, the trickster figure, represents the unseen or unconscious neurotic habitual tendencies that usually direct mental chatter. But if the water jug is full to the brim, Mara can gain no access. When conscious awareness is fully engaged, but with direct sense experience rather than with mental narrative. By filling up the senses, one empties out the mind. With the peace that ensues from quieting the mind in this way, Dharma investigation can begin. So I want to close with a story that simply underlines the urgency of this practice. It comes from the Navajo tradition, and it's said that the Navajo teach their children that the sun lives only one day, that it comes in the morning, stays for the day, and leaves at night, never to return. They take their children out at dawn to see the sunrise, and they say, "Live this day in a good way, so the sun will not have wasted its precious time."